Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Electric Leftovers. My name is Jason. What episode is this? I don't know. I'm not on my desk, man. I should have looked before I started. And now I gotta go to the thing and go to the thing and go to the thing. 423. It's big game day. Are you ready for big game day? You know, that one where kind of not supposed to be able to say, but everybody does anyway. The really great vessel. The great vessel. The mega cauldron. I don't know. Welcome to the show. This week, I'm out in the studio doing some stuff, and I've decided... How can I say this? Last week's show was great. I had done a little test. Things were looking good. I liked how everything worked on my little test thing. And then I implemented it into the actual episode, and it went horrible. It was awful. It was bad. Nobody had a good time. So I'm... 'cause work in progress, and I'm actually in a really bad... that spot today. I'll deal with it in a second. So the show has always been an audio show, and I was trying to take the audio show and give it a video option, but the problem is I started putting too much into the video aspect of it, and it really kind of sunk the audio aspect of it. So we're doing the audio aspect of it. There's still going to be a video version. It's just going to be slightly different. If you watch the video version, you will see that it's going to be slightly different. If you don't, you ain't going to notice. Okay. This week, we have the finale. Oh, no, excuse me. We did that last week. This week, we're going to have even more Final Fantasy Tactics. We are going to have new stream is Super Mario World. We're going to look at a movie. That movie, I think, this week is High Noon. And we're going to listen to a Warren Zevon song, which I believe is Veracruz. That information, sadly, is not in front of me right now. So I will make that work. Change things if I have to. As for video game stuff, we're going to get some reviews of Ghouls and Ghosts. And we are going to dig into the archives and look at a game called Gone Home. A game I played a couple times and I enjoyed each time. And, you know, what else can you really ask for from that? That's enough for an intro, though. Let's get out of here and get on our way. Get out of here and get on our way. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. June 7th, 1995, 1:15 a.m. You arrive home after a year abroad. You expect your family to greet you, but the house is empty. Something's not right. Where is everyone, and what's happened here? Gone Home is an interactive exploration simulator. Interrogate every detail in a seemingly normal house to discover the story of the people who live there. Open any drawer and door, pick up objects and examine them to discover clues. Uncover the events of one family's lives by investigating what they've left behind. Go home again. This is indeed Gone Home. It is a, as it says, an interactive exploration game. Some people call it a walking simulator. It's basically a first-person adventure game from the Fulbright Company. They developed and published it, and they even released it. Can you imagine that? In August of 2013. This is very similar to that game we played called Dear Esther. In fact, I think I found this game when I was either looking for something like Dear Esther, or it showed up as being similar to Dear Esther, and I really did like missing Dear Esther. This game is different. It's a little more grounded in reality. It's not quite as pretty. Very few things I've discovered are as pretty as Dear Esther. But it is much more character-based. We don't have a narrator in this so much like we did Dear Esther. We have recordings and writings and clippings from the family, and it's tells the story about a character that we don't actually get to ever meet. There's nobody in the game but us. I really enjoy it. I played it a while ago, I think just for myself. I streamed it not too terribly long ago, and I think it's a great game. Again, not one like Dear Esther, not one that you could probably play two or three different times and get a different experience out of. But if you want to experience the story with us, check it out. I can work with that. I can work with that for sure. Where's our... Oh, that's ghosts and goblins. I didn't want ghosts and goblins. I wanted ghouls and ghosts. Not to be confused with super ghouls and ghosts. I like that I type in exactly ghouls and ghosts. And it's like the third thing. Because the two above it aren't that. Anyway... Out here in the studio, trying to keep my head large as it is between the heater and you guys, because I rearranged and I'm kind of set up a little different. And, you know, it'll work. This is not the end-all, be-all setup. It's just how I set up today. Okay. So I'm trying to do this on my little tiny tablet, so it's not great. Do we have any... What do we call them? Regular contributors? I don't think so. We will do that one. We will do this one. Yeah, here we go. We'll do this one. Starting with truck underscore one underscore zero underscore one underscore please give. He reviewed it in 2008, and he updated his review in 2023. Yeah, crazy. 15 years later. Probably took him that long to finish the game. What kind of a name is the Princess of Mus? Or Hus? Question mark. Almost as bad as the Goddess of Battle. Yeah, you read that right. Insert capitalization Tourette's wherever you think it belongs. Because they sure did. And we begin. Ah, yes. I love it when we start like that in writing. Ghouls and Ghosts is one of my favorite Genesis games. One of the first games I ever played. Although I can now beat the game with relative ease, this is a very difficult game that requires a lot of time and patience to beat. With that being said, let us move on to gameplay. Gameplay, two words in this review. It's usually one word in everybody else, and they begin. Gameplay, 8 out of 10. If the game was a bit easier, it would have easily scored a 10 here. However, it simply is too difficult to give it even a 9. Other than that, though, this is a fantastic game that is very addictive and at the same time a hell of a lot of fun. Traversing the worlds will require many different weapons, sword, blue fire, axe, etc., spelled out, all with their own attributes and unique uses and abilities. Let me insert the punctuation. Traversing the worlds will require many different weapons, parenthesis, sword, comma, blue fire, comma, axe, comma, etc., comma, all with their own attributes and unique uses, close parenthesis, and abilities, open parenthesis, which differ depending on your armor status, close parenthesis, comma, all of which Arthur can possess at any time in the game. This is not your typical plat dash former, comma, another reason why this game is a lot of fun, semicolon, it has its own formula, comma, not the same standard plat hyphen forming formula that existed in the 1980s. And the way they have 80s here is it's apostrophed, so that means it belongs to the 80s. There is also a two-player mode that pits you against a buddy to see who can complete the game first. Awesome stuff. How is the story? I'd also like to point out this game was released in 88, so barely an 80s game. Story, 6 out of 10. The same tired Rescue the Princess story that is ever so popular, though this game does it in style. Arthur must use all of his own designed weapons and armor to battle the creatures in the Ghouls and Ghosts world, and then rescue the Princess of Mus, or Hus, god, that's a stupid name. Not sure why he didn't use the previously used Princess Prin-Prin, but I digress, graphics will be covered next. That was beautiful. Shakespearean, one might say. Graphics, 8 out of 10. Great Genesis graphics on the game. Some of the best for the earlier games in the console's life. Arthur looks great, whether he is in armor, a duck, or himself, and the backgrounds are really cool to look at with a fair amount of detail and decent animation. The enemies are all unique looking and all have character. Sounds are next. I like that he previews what we're about to read. 3 words before we read it. Sound, 9 out of 10. Sounds range from humorous to cruddy. However, there are a wide range of sound effects in this game. A sound for everything. The way he's got that punctuated. This game, a sound for everything. The music is really great, though. No. As each track adds color to each level and some suit their respective level perfectly, is the game replayable? Okay, truck. Replayability, 8 out of 10. You bet it is. Ghouls and Ghosts will take a very long time to beat, seeing how hard it is. And even when you do, you just want to go back and beat it again with invincibility on. It takes the stressful parts of the game out, lets you have a bit more fun with the game, and is my preferred way of playing in the current day. Oh, sure, he could beat it with relative ease, he says, as long as he's got invincibility on. Buy or rent? You want to buy this game, as it was... on of the Genesis originals. Buy it! Super fun game this is. Oh, Yoda, even if it is difficult, I still come back to the game time and time again just to let off a bit of steam, and it is worth it. So lift your arm in victory, just as Arthur does, for Ghouls and Ghosts is a winner. Congratulation, in quotes, he says. Gave it an 8. He's got a little blurb here. Canadian by birth, Italian by heritage, I cut my teeth on the Genesis and arcades, Sega 100%, says Truck, _1_0_1_, which is probably Canadian for Italian, or vice versa. Death Slayer in 2006 says, "The Death Slayer says, no princess is worth this much trouble. Ghouls and Ghosts, a game well known for frustrating difficulty, yet somehow people still have a biased view and praise the game. I honestly want to know what drug they are on, because I really need it after playing this game. This was originally an arcade game, then ported to the Sega Genesis, and we all know the point of an arcade game, don't we? Is to suck as many quarters out of your pockets as it can by getting you killed all the time. Only on the Sega Genesis, we don't lose quarters. We lose our controllers after breaking them due to the insanity this game can bring people. If you don't have the patience of a saint, then do not go anywhere near this game. You play the role of Arthur, and his love, the princess, was kidnapped by a demon, so he has to set out and slaughter all the ghouls and ghosts in his path till he gets to the demon's lair. Where have I heard this story before? I wonder. But since the game is as old as I am, 1988, I think I'll give it a break. Back then, that's all it took to get a gamer motivated to reach the end. But these days, it takes more than that to get people motivated, especially me. Hopefully, if I was Arthur after dying countless times trying to get to my love, thank God this game has infinite continues, period, I would just let the demon keep her. There are plenty of fish in the sea. No princess is worth this much trouble. The demon is most likely in need of some loving anyway, and this is probably the only way he can get some. It isn't like he's trying to take over the world or anything. The difficulty of this game, is not the fact that there are infinite amount of spawning monsters coming out of nowhere 24/7, or the fact that if you get hit 2 times you die, or even the fact that you get little control of where you throw your weapons, but it is due to the horrible hit contact the game has. A bat flying half a foot above my head somehow manages to hit me and get rid of the magical armor I worked so hard for. Yet, me throwing an axe, for instance, obviously makes contact with the enemy and it isn't recorded as a hit. What kind of nonsense is that? But putting that aside, I struggled with this game and finally got to the end, only to be told to go back to the village and start over because, quote, I wasn't powerful enough to beat the boss. Gee, thanks. So that means all the crap I went through was for nothing. They could have told me sooner. As I go insane, death after death, I get to listen to the horrid background music in the background. I can't let the first level's BMG slide, seeing it as it is tribute to the originally NES's version, but the rest of the stages forced me to turn off the sound on the TV, and not only is the music bad, but the sound effects are just as annoying. Don't even get me started on the sound effect that occurs when you die and become a pile of bones. Music is lacking and the graphics are nothing spectacular. It was a launch title for the Sega Genesis. You aren't going to be getting any decent eye candy or ear candy. Take it from me, the game is not worth the trouble to get. For me, all it took was a 5-minute search under the bed for me to find for old time's sake, excuse me. For you, it will probably be an eBay search and money. Don't pay attention to anyone else who says this game is good. If a good game means dying and starting over countless times, then by all means, join the sheep herd. But if you have an IQ above that of a rock, then stay away. Graphics 4, sound 2, story 4, gameplay 1, difficulty 10, overall 1 out of 10, not an average of the other scores, which were also all out of 10. What was your name? Death Slayer. He gave it a 1. Death Slayer did not like this game. Finally, XX Warp Star XX in 2010 comes along with addicting, hard, and just plain annoying. Ghouls and Ghosts is so hard to explain. You're King Arthur going out to save the princess. But I don't know one person who did without an emulator and save states. It's so hard and annoying to play this game that it's not even worth your time. I can't tell you how many hours I've wasted on this game that I can never get back. It keeps calling you back and you decide to play it, but after about 1 hour you're like, that's it, and put in a different game. What's so bad, you might ask? Well, allow me to explain so your life is not wasted by this game. People wrote funny 10 years ago. Graphics, 7 out of 10. Cartoon-like graphics, very dark though. Anyways, I haven't gotten past the fourth level, so I couldn't tell you. But this character looks really cool. I'll admit that the blue feather weapon does look cool when you throw it down and it makes blue fire. But there's nothing else special. I don't like that you didn't finish the game, sir. Music, 7 out of 10. The music has this weird, scary, but comical feel to it, kind of like what you'd hear when burglars are sneaking into a house on a cartoon and they keep tripping over stuff. But after about 10 minutes, the exact same music just gets old. gameplay, 7 out of 10. A typical side-scroller with a challenge added to it. You can only get hit 2 times before you die, Evil magicians are hidden in treasure chests, and enemies are all over the place. It's just so frustrating! The enemies are so much more powerful than you because they're either too high or too low for you to hit. You can aim up, but that doesn't work around the hill and you're the opposite direction that they're in, up or down. Story, 5 out of 10. How many times have we saved the princess, Mario, Zelda, even this game is guilty of the save the princess storyline? It's fine in a classic like Zelda or Mario, but after those games have been out for so many years and had so many sequels, shouldn't this game's creators have stopped and thought, hey, that story's kind of overused, let's not use it. I'm going to interject here and say by the time this game came out, those games hadn't been out very long. Controls, 7 out of 10. Typical game controls, nothing more to say about that. Gee, thanks. Replay value, 3 out of 10. I've never even beaten the game. There's obviously no replay value without getting motivation and saying, hey, I can beat the game. Then going back to play it, not beating it, then it happens all over again the next day. It's so frustrating. Again. Total, 6 out of 10. This game is frustrating. It has a repetitive storyline, it has mediocre music and graphics, it keeps calling you back because you think you can beat it, but the truth is that you can't, not without cheating. Don't do it, people. It'll waste your life. XXWarpStarXX says it's worth a 6. And I think I fall in line with that. I don't think the game is great. It's not anywhere near a 9 or a 10. I don't think it's all that bad as Death Slayer said and gave it a 1. I can understand his position and Warpstar's position, though, because the game looks average. It sounds average. I think it sounds bad because it's on the Genesis. And I need to, because I have to say this every time, because I've said this before and then people are like, what? You don't like the music? I think the music on Genesis games is good. I think there's some really good songs on Genesis games. I think the instrumentation on Genesis games is horrible because it's just like real crappy MIDI and it sounds bad. That's one thing the Super Nintendo had over Sega is that the SNES had its own like sound chip. And the way it worked is you could like the decoder, and I'm probably 100% wrong about this, but I'm going to try and explain it the best I can. The decoder for the music is on the console, but the chip for the music is on the game. That's why you can have, like, you listen to a trumpet in Earthbound versus a trumpet in ActRaiser versus a trumpet in a Mega Man game, and they all sound totally different. You can tell it's a trumpet, but it's different. Whereas a Genesis game, a trumpet in Shining Force sounds like a trumpet in Sonic, sounds like a trumpet in Ranger X, sounds like a trumpet in Streets of Rage, sounds like a trumpet in Ghouls and Ghosts. They all sound the same. And because it's MIDI, every song in every game sounds the same. Because that's how they sound. And the sound effects are bad. They're annoying. They're that real sharp, like sine wave, just tinny. And, I don't like it. It's gross. The story's boring. The gameplay's fine. Like, the controls are mostly okay. It plays better than the NES Ghouls and Ghosts, but it plays worse than the Super Nintendo one. There's a very loud cat outside my door. Like, I think it's fine. I think it's a slightly below average game. If I want to play a Ghouls and Ghosts game again, I'm not going to play this one. This one would be probably bottom of my list. I'd probably play the Super Nintendo one, then the NES one, because I've not beat the NES one yet. That's what I know. That's what I can tell you. Let's move on. We'll be right back. It is time to talk about a movie. And I've got my little tiny tablet out here. Not the best thing in the world to do this with. The movie we're going to look about is called High Noon, 1952 American Western, produced by Stanley Kramer from a screenplay by Carl Foreman, and was directed by Fred Zinnerman. It stars Gary Cooper. The plot occurs basically in real time. There is no big jumps in chronography throughout the course of the movie. A town marshal whose sense of duty is tested when he must decide to either face a gang of killers or leave town with his new wife. It's a very great movie. I absolutely love it. It was selected by the Library of Congress as one of the first 25 films for preservation for the U.S. Film Registry, being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. They did that in 1989 in its first year. The story has been partly or completely, repeated in later film productions. Its ending has inspired numerous later films, not just Westerns. And I picked this one. Number one, it's a great movie. It's got some very good actors in it. Gary Cooper, of course, Thomas Mitchell, Lloyd Bridges, the one and only, Grace Kelly, Lon Chaney Jr., Lee Van Cleef is in this. There's a lot of very good people, credited and uncredited both. The reason I picked it is there's some controversy about this film because it was really kind of in the... House Un-American Activities, that whole thing, you know. Because it really wasn't the people involved in it were presumed to be communists, right? And the story, without trying to spoil anything, the sheriff is not the big heroic "I'll do whatever I need to do to save my town" kind of thing, because in this movie he's old, he just got married, and people were coming into town, you know, coming to get him. Problem is, as good as the movie is, John Wayne saw it, hated it, decided everybody in it was terrible, and so he wanted to remake the movie where he would be the sheriff and everybody would just, "Oh, John Wayne, you're so wonderful, we love you, we'll even overlook that you're a terrible actor and a horrible, horrible racist." He made a movie called Rio Bravo, which is High Noon in Bizarro World. I've seen them both. There's no reason to watch Rio Bravo, I promise. You can skip it. High Noon, absolutely required viewing if you pretend to like movies. Or even if you want to pretend you like movies. It's a great movie. Much better acting, much better writing, much better movie.
Box so I could get the
tablet up here to where I can actually read the damn thing. And it's this little, like, crummy plastic Home Depot toolbox. And it says on the top, "Do not stand on." Can't even put the weight of my sorrows on that thing without it collapsing. Anyway. News you can use, ladies and gentlemen. Researchers at Western Sydney University, that would be in Sydney, have revealed results of a study showing that frequent nose pickers may have a higher probability of developing Alzheimer's disease, WIONTV. WION thus reported on February 7th that the habit introduces germs into the nasal cavity that trigger the brain to produce beta amyloid as a defense. An abundance of beta amyloid is believed to be the leading cause of Alzheimer's. It is essential to note, it says, that the temporary relief obtained from nose picking is not a substitute for proper nasal hygiene, the report said. The proper nasal hygiene being regular cleaning and maintenance of the nasal passages through gentle methods, such as saline rinses or blowing the nose. I went to Vegas once, blew my nose. Oh, it's terrible. Sweet revenge. Paul Gibbons, 63, of Kingsclere, England? I don't know, he's from England. Paid about $32,000 to have his kitchen remodeled a year ago, the Basingstoke Gazette reported. Wix, the company he chose to do the work, bungled it, according to Gibbons. Bungled, I say. "The finish throughout is so poor and half the kitchen doesn't fit as it should. I agreed to the contract and what I was told would be 2 weeks of work, and I am left with a kitchen which I can't even use as you should." As a result, Gibbons demanded a refund, but when he couldn't get that, he parked a decommissioned 1963 gun tank that he had borrowed from a friend outside the store. Wix called that unacceptable and aggressive behavior and threatened to have the tank removed. But Gibbons isn't budging. I want my money back, and I want them to take that kitchen out of my house so I can get a new one. I've seen somebody, a couple people, in jolly old England, having renovation work redone, and it's very different than how, like, we would do it in the States. Just, like, the process is just weird, because the homes are weird, the materials are different. I will say, though, I much prefer their electrical system to ours, at least in terms of how we wire things, our wire colors and all that. It makes much more sense their way than it does our way. I don't need it to be 220. 110's fine. Just give me those colors. I'll be happy. Consumer Report. After 2.5 years, Jackie Wynn of Seattle just didn't like her couch anymore, USA Today reported on February 1st. And after checking with Costco's return policy, Wynn returned the couch to the store for a full refund. "We just didn't like the color anymore," she admitted on a TikTok video. Ugh. Why? What is? Look, I hate TikTok for several reasons. This and one of them is because this is the kind of stuff people post on it. "I don't like my couch." TikTok, give me attention. Wynn didn't even have a receipt, but she did have a good memory and can tell the clerk the date she bought the sofa. The clerk looked it up and refunded $900 to her card. Costco told Wynn that returned items are donated, resold, and returned to the manufacturer for a credit or refurbished. That's not weird. It's annoying. I mean, good for Costco that they, like, "No, we got you. You're good. And we don't destroy it. We do something with it." That's great. I appreciate that they do that. That didn't need to be a TikTok. It didn't need to be a story. Waste of everybody's time. Field Report. On January 20th, as an Amish couple from Shipshawana, Indiana, stopped at a Walmart in Sturgis, Michigan, Lana Latosky, 31, allegedly climbed inside their buggy and directed their horse away from the parking lot, MLive.com reported. A witness saw the woman drive off and thought it was odd that she wasn't Amish, but didn't report the theft. When the couple came out and realized their ride was gone, a truck driver offered them shelter from the cold and alerted police, who tracked down the buggy at an Admiral gas station where it was parked. Latosky was located in the motel next door, hiding under a pile of clothing in a shower. She admitted taking the horse and buggy and said she had, quote, "instant regret, but she was cold and needed to get home," the officer said. We got another one of those, she said, they said, with a quote in the middle that we could attribute to either the first said or the second said. Again, news of the weird. I'm going to help you out. She admitted to taking the horse and buggy, and an officer reported that she had said she had instant regret but was cold and needed to get home. There. That is the officer telling us what she said. Instead of she said this, and then that being attributed to someone else after the saying was already said, you put it in a row. You don't sandwich it between two saids. Okay? Okay. I asked her if she ever had any training with equestrians, he said. She didn't know what equestrian meant. Apparently, nor did the officer. I'm glad you said it, News of the Weird, because I was about to. Latosky was charged with larceny of livestock and general larceny, as opposed to specific larceny. Naked, not afraid. Being naked in public in Florida is right on the cusp of being no longer weird. I like half of the stories we read in this stupid thing. Sorry. On February 5th, Martin Evtomov, 36, parked his car on the sidewalk at Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport and climbed out without a stitch of clothing on, the New York Post reported. He entered Terminal 1 and approached the TSA security line as he spoke incoherently, then wandered toward the baggage inspection area, probably to get his baggage inspected, if you know what I mean. That's where Broward County Sheriff's deputies and TSA officers caught up with him. Evtomov resisted arrest but was eventually subdued. A judge later banned him from the airport and ordered a mental health screening. Is that a permanent ban or a temporary ban until the screening is complete? Because, you know, that's probably how it should go. Stories of weird science. Jason Clampett, 43, was arrested on January 24th after it came to the attention of the FBI that he might be manufacturing the poison ricin on his property in Winslow, Arkansas. KNWA-TV reported that an anonymous caller told the Washington County Sheriff's Office that Clampett might have poisoned his mother with ricin, and when his property was searched, officers found castor beans, the source of ricin, and a jar of suspected liquid ricin. According to text messages, including the affidavit, Clampett told his sister that he, quote, made it to get people to stay out of our woods. There's a group of thieves out here called the Owlers. They snoop around watching people at night, and they dress in ghillie suits and hide in the bushes. So I made this stuff and I set traps in the woods. He was held on a $500,000 bond. Well, what was the suspected liquid, ricin, in the jar? But castor beans aren't illegal. We had them in my house when I was a kid. I'd plant them again. They're cool-looking plants, man. But yeah, that's where ricin comes from. And now you know. Don't eat castor beans. I don't know if castor oil comes from the castor bean and what the difference is. Maybe that's what the suspected liquid is. Maybe it's just castor oil. Not to be confused with castrol. Animal antics. On February 1st, the lights went out in central Toronto. Well, that's not Georgia. Darkening traffic signals and trapping people in elevators, Reuters reported. Crews who investigated found it was a roguish raccoon who made contact with equipment at the city's Hydro One electric station. The raccoon did not survive, a spokesperson said. That whole sentence, the raccoon did not blah blah blah, is in parentheses. It does not need to be in parentheses, it's its own sentence. What are you doing? About 7,000 were affected for about 3 hours, Hydro One reported. While raccoon-caused outages are not unheard of, squirrels are the more common culprits. What if the squirrels are instigating the raccoon behavior that leads to the power outage? What about that? Inexplicable Florida man Jason. There's a lot of Jasons in the news. I hope I'm not in here. No boy. Bazuski Skuskowitz. I'm going to spell it for you. You leave me a voicemail. You tell me how you would pronounce this just off the spelling. BRZUSZKIEWICZ. Brzuskiewicz? Brzuskiewicz? We're going to call him Bruce. Jason Bruce, 49, laughed his way through an incident on February 6th in New Smyrna Beach, the New York Post reported. Around 9 a.m., Bruce allegedly drove his pickup around a do-not-enter sign at the beach and straight into the ocean, as beachgoers looked on and recorded video. Well, why were there? Why were the beachgoers there? You're not supposed to enter. When deputies questioned him about his antics, he said, "Not my fault the truck don't surf." He also claimed he thought he was in England. Bruce's only charge was for failing to pay the access fee to the beach. His truck was towed away. Good old Bruce. Do not enter, but there's people there, so they entered. The entrepreneurial spirit on February 3rd, police in Calgary, Canada, caught up with Alex Lee, whom they had been tracking since Christmas Eve. The Calgary Herald reported that Lee, whose real name is Syed Amir Razavi, was charged with drug trafficking in connection with an unusual scheme. The 30-year-old handed out business cards with free samples of cocaine stapled to them at a local casino in an effort to boost his sales. At a search of Razavi's home, police found almost 60 grams of cocaine, a digital scale, cash, and Alex Lee business cards. See, the sample card, not a good idea. You need a punch card. We've read about that in this before. Continuing in the entrepreneurial spirit, when Carol Germain, 46, of Brest, France, adopted a pig in 2020, she didn't foresee that couscous would lead her to a new business venture, pig pedicurist. Yahoo News, wow, still a Yahoo News, reported that Germain, who runs a bar in Brest, had started traveling all over France to trim the tusks and hooves of porcine pets. In fact, she's selling the bar to devote herself full-time to the practice. It's nuts. I thought I was the only person who had one hogging the couch, but there are thousands, she said. On one trip around the south of France, she treated 43 pigs. Some of them consented. Crime Report. What is it about Disney World that provokes violence from park visitors? Disney. Detroit. Detective. It just says debt, period, and then there's a space. Like a line break. Detective Dwayne Danforth, 38, of the Brookline, Massachusetts Police Department, is now on paid administrative leave after he allegedly assaulted security staffers and cast members at Epcot Theme Park on January 30th, WHDTV reported. Oh, security staffers and cast members. Not cast members. He didn't do it. They are it. Pardon me. Police reports say Danforth tried to access an off-limits area and said, "I'm gonna expletive kill you," while pushing a cast member away. Danforth was the 2021 Officer of the Year in Brookline, recognized for his ability to de-escalate situations. He will remain on leave until an internal investigation is complete. Well, what, the guy with the truck? He got to go where he wasn't supposed to go, and there were already people there. Maybe he heard about that. It was in Florida. Maybe he heard about Bruce in New Smyrna Beach. Right? Is Smyrna Beach in Florida? I don't know. Well, he was from Florida. Jason Bruce is from Florida. So I'm going to assume Jason Bruce from Florida drove his truck into a restricted area, and all he got was a $50 fine. So Dwayne here wanted to do the same thing, and he's on administrative leave. Paid administrative leave, I might add. How many times have you been sent home from work and got paid for it? And you didn't do it. You didn't threaten to kill Mickey Mouse. He is in Florida. Maybe he's, you know, working for Ron DeSantis. Problem here. You're a little in and out. Our weekly Warren is the song Veracruz. The song Veracruz appears on the Excitable Boy album, and it's an interesting song. It's an interesting song in that it's historical. It tells a story. Right? It was written by Zevon and Jorge Calderon, who was a longtime collaborator of Warren, played drums, produced, wrote songs, all of this. Jorge does some harmony and backing vocals, and he sings the Spanish section on Veracruz. And Veracruz is the opening line is, "I heard Woodrow Wilson's guns. I heard them in the harbor." And it's, you know, we gotta get out of here. Veracruz is falling. Kind of thing. It's a very pretty song. I like it. I just ain't much to tell you other than that's who it is and what it's about. There is a recorder part, like a pan, not a pan flute, like a fife almost kind of thing, played by Jim Horn on that track. Great track. All right, ladies and gentlemen, here is how this is going to work with the video version of the show. And I'm going to tell you that as we're wrapping things up. Until I have a better setup to where I can take the audio from here and put it into here and then move all that to the video thing with you know, video of this whole thing as he gestures at the room that you can't see. I've utilized some artificial intelligence. Because look, AI is bad at a lot of things. It's bad at making pictures, but if you give it very few prompts, it's not too terrible. So I gave it some prompts and it returned some like what are the four words you would use to describe me? I got that, and then I plugged that in, and then I put me in a location. And then I just tweaked it a little bit. And so I think it captured my essence fairly well. So we're going to do that. We'll still over here on the side. We'll have pictures of the games, the movies, the albums, all that other stuff. So you've already watched that. If you've seen the video, you're good there. If you haven't seen the video version or you don't care, don't worry about it. If you do care and you want to see it, but you're not currently seeing it, go to buymeacoffee.com/electricleft. Kick in $5 a month. That gets you all the episodes, both in audio form, like you're getting now, and in video form, if you want to see the thing. You know, because that's what we do. If you would like to join me on YouTube for some videos of games like Gone Home, Ghouls and Ghosts, Final Fantasy Tactics, that Obra Dinn game we finished up, Super Mario World, and so much more. Find me on YouTube, Jason's Groove Machine. If you'd like to join me Monday for a stream over at Twitch, where we are going to be starting, or already have by the time you heard this, Super Mario World, I'm Jason's Groove Machine over there. Or you can just go to jasonsgroovemachine.com and get all of it. Just boom, right there. In your face, ready to go. 365, 24/7, even on Super Bowl Sunday. Thanks, everybody. I will catch you later. Have a good day.